I'd like to call the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, and we need a motion to accept or to approve the minutes from March the 3rd. Do I hear a motion? Sort of Rosenthal. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the minutes are approved. We have two bills on the agenda today, and we'd like to call Representative Dabney to the witness stand. Welcome to this special committee.
It's special for me.
Yes.
Special for you. Thank you.
We don't see you that often here.
No. No, I don't get here that often, but I'm not going to point that out because somebody will want treats. And I didn't bring any. I didn't.
Some of us have had enough treats already today.
Put me on that list, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I need a motion to bring House File 89 before the committee.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Lean moves House File 89 to be referred to the Tax Committee. And right now we recognize you, Representative Dabney, and would you state your case?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, the referral, as you saw, was to the Tax Committee because this is part of tax law that affects higher education, both institutions and higher education students. And if you were to look, and hopefully in your packets is this item. I feel like I'm back teaching. Children, take out this and Buffalo, exactly, Representative McDonald. But if you look on page 2 of that document from the Department of Revenue, they review the sales tax status of instructional materials. What the statute says is that instructional materials, and I'm quoting starting on page 1, line 7 of the bill, which is current law, instructional materials other than textbooks that are prescribed for use in conjunction with a course of study in a post-secondary school, college, university, or private career school to students who are regularly enrolled at such institutions are exempt. Seems fairly straightforward. For purposes of this subdivision, instructional materials means materials required to be used directly in the completion of the course of study, including but not limited to, and then it says interactive CDs, tapes, digital audio works, digital audiovisual works, and computer software. So including but not limited to. So clearly the plain English understanding of that language is that instructional materials required by an instructor in a course of study, the student should not have to pay sales tax on those materials. Unfortunately, that is not the way the Department of Revenue has been interpreting that, creating problems for students and for our higher education institutions. With me today is Ms. Carrie Johnson-Palava, who can talk of her institution and her students' challenges with this very provision, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Carrie Johnson-Palava. And I am director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu Therapy School and Clinic in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. I am in support of House File 89 due to the experience I had with the Department of Revenue this last year and the issue of the interpretation of instructional materials. As a company and an accredited school, we've been very vigilant to stay current with regulations and to pay all appropriate fees and taxes. We're very careful to stay current with policies and to inquire with the Department of Revenue when there is a question. I have an experience that I'd like to share with you and hopefully a solution that you will consider. The Department of Revenue conducted a sales tax audit of my school in December 2012. We had confirmed over the years through phone calls to the department as to how to collect required sales tax or not to collect sales tax for students' required materials, textbooks, manuals, equipment, lab fees, charts, and supplies. We followed exactly what we were told by the Department of Revenue's telephone assistance line. We had no reason to believe that we were being given incorrect information. The published information is exactly what Representative Dabney said. That's what we were using to help us, guide us about instructional materials and what is taxable and what is not taxable. During our sales tax audit, we learned that instructional materials meant only textbooks, written manuals, or the electronic equivalent. As a result, we had years of back sales tax that we needed to pay and were unable to collect from our students, even though we followed the guidelines given to us and all the guidance given to us by the Department of Revenue. I was sure that this would be forgiven in an appeal. We went through a very long appeal process, and it was not, and we had to pay. The interpretation of instructional materials seems to have changed over the years, and I'm very concerned about the current interpretation. Vocational education plays a very important part in our state and country. Vocational education teaches skills to students who are then very employable after the completion of a program. My massage school is considered vocational education. We have a 93% placement rate of our graduates, which is extremely high. Vocational education is not just academics. We teach skills. In order for students to learn skills, students need to purchase equipment and supplies. Our students need to practice 3 to 4 bodywork sessions outside of the classroom every week once they start school. They are required to purchase a massage table or a shiatsu mat, lotions, linens, and many more pieces of equipment at the beginning of their education. They cannot practice these skills without this equipment. We teach the sciences, and a lot of sciences. So we do use a lot of textbooks, but we also use a lot of kinesthetic models to teach anatomy and physiology. Our students build the human musculature out of clay on a skeletal model. This teaches the layering of the muscular system, which muscles are deep and intrinsic, and which muscles are superficial. And if anyone on this committee has ever received a massage, you will want your therapist to know the difference between intrinsic and superficial muscles. We also teach shiatsu, a form of therapeutic bodywork from Japan. Shiatsu is based on the same foundational theories and principles as acupuncture. Our students are required to purchase a 24-inch model of a human body with the map of the acupoints. They need to learn over 700 points on the human body. This model is their 3D textbook. All of the equipment and supplies needed to learn massage and shiatsu, which I have mentioned, are currently taxable. Students pay sales tax on all of this equipment. Therefore, I find that there is a bias in the current interpretation of the phrase instructional materials to favor academia and to discriminate against vocational education. Yes, we use textbooks, and those are tax exempt, and they are very important to us. But in many vocational training programs, students are required to purchase equipment and supplies because they're required to practice their skills outside of the classroom during their educational process. They need to learn how to develop their skills. They do not simply learn skills from a book. They must practice their skills throughout their education. Skill development is essential and cannot be done without the proper equipment and supplies and regular practice outside of the classroom. So why do these students who are currently enrolled in a course of study that trains them for future employment need to pay sales tax on required equipment and supplies needed to complete their course of study? This seems unfair and out of line with Minnesota's intent to support education. It's unfair to the student who chooses vocational education over those who choose academia or an academic education. So I ask you to support House File 89 as submitted. Thank you, Chairman and committee members.
Thank you very much. We have questions, first of all, from Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Could you just let us know what your initial assessment was when you had your tax liability and then what the final settlement was? And maybe you're still in some litigation, but if you could kind of let us know where the Department of Revenue started with as a number for you, and then I know there's a negotiation back and forth, that's how it works, but what was the final assessment?
Off the top of my head, the initial Mr. Chairman and committee, the initial assessment was, I have it here, but off the top of my head, it was about $10,500, $10,600. And the final payment was about $5,500 after negotiation and spending quite a bit of money on attorney's fees. So basically, we spent over $10,000.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. I just want to get a scope of the cost and what, you know, in this one instance, what it would relieve. Thank you.
Representative Dabney, these items that are listed that are now hopefully tax exempt, are these purchased at the school? Or, I mean, I'm wondering how the general public would not understand if you're buying at Target or someplace, these materials. Or is there some way to identify that they're tax exempt?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Luckily, this question came up when the bill was heard in the Senate yesterday. I asked Ms. Dalton from our House research staff to look into it, and she's here in the audience and can correct me. But if I'm a student, if I'm purchasing a required item, but I'm purchasing it at Target, I'm purchasing it online at Amazon, something like that, I would have to provide the proper documentation that made this sales tax exempt. The school, if I'm purchasing it at the school's bookstore or the school's supply store, they already have that information and I don't need to provide it. But if I go outside, I need to have that that document with me that clarifies for the clerk that I do not pay sales tax on this item. It's the same thing you'll see at grocery stores when nonprofits come through to purchase taxable items. They'll provide a certificate that demonstrates that they are sales tax exempt and no sales tax then is charged on the transaction.
Representative Dabney, I understand that. Does this cause any problems for the merchants or for the store to program? I know Fleet Farm, if you're a farmer, mm-hmm. they exempt everything that, you know, it's just part of their, how everything is programmed. I'm just wondering if, again, going back to Target as an example, if this would cause problems within their accounting system.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I assume that they are already having some transactions where items are taxable and other transactions where items are non-taxable, or a mixture of the two for various reasons, and they have a way to process to handle that.
They do sell some groceries, so I guess you're right. Yeah. That's probably part of that.
So I assume that they have a way to track that in their own internal system.
Did I see another hand? Representative O'Neill, are you back?
Yes.
Another question?
Just a small follow-up. And so the initial assessment of $10,500 or so, was that looking at a one-year look, or was that over 3.5 years, which is what they legally can do? Was it an assessment for 1 or 3 years?
Palava?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it was, my understanding is that it was over 4 years, and it was a four-year period from 2009 through 2009 through November of 2012 is what they looked at.
Thank you, Chair. So,
Representative O'Neill.
So usually 3.5 years is the max sales tax period that they can look at. So they must have done the max then for a $10,500 plus lawyer's fees, which is as much as you were reduced. So. Still at that same $10,000. Thank you. Appreciate that information.
Any other questions? Seeing none, any final comments from Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate support in moving the bill on to the tax committee so we can deal with that aspect of it. But clearly, the legislature in the past has said that instructional materials should be tax exempt for students, and I hope that we will continue in that tradition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal renews the question. McDonald?
Yes, sorry. I just thought of a question, Mr. Chair, for Representative Dabney. And just reviewing your bill, and also you could tell the school teacher in you, very good, very attentive.
I'm grading you as well,
you are?
McDonald.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that case, let me sit up straight. In your digital audio-visual works, does that's just audio-visual, but no reference to any materials such as a digital camera? Often students will take digital photography, and they'll have to purchase a digital camera and a flash cards or a flash or papers and stuff. Is that not applicable with your bill?
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, and I'm making eye contact here, but the current language, so the current statute is broad. Remember on 1.12, including but not limited to, and then there's what's intended as an illustrative but not definite list. We're expanding the illustrative list. We're not omitting something like a digital camera if it's required for the course. But she's rising. Mr. Chair, Ms. Dalton is here to correct me.
All right. Did you hear the question clear and concise?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. Representative Dabney, what he said is correct. I just think there needs to be a little bit more expansion on this. In the case of a digital camera, under this language, if you were essentially looking for getting a degree in photography or something like that, then that could be a requirement for your course. And even though it is something that you would use in your professional career, it would, if you were buying it while taking the courses, then it would be exempt. If you were just taking photography as a recreational class, then no, it probably would not be exempt.
Representative McDonald, has it cleared up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pretty much. Ms. Dalton and I work, as you can imagine, since I'm on the tax committee and probably like to have a lot of questions regarding photography and cameras. So just to clarify, how does then the point of purchase sale for that tax exemption, how would that be handled logistically according to state statutes if this passed, that one would prove that they purchased this educational material for class because of their degree?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what the student would have to do is the student would have to essentially give the seller a sales tax exemption certificate, just like anybody else who is claiming an exemption would have to do. And as the seller has taken that exemption certificate in good faith, the seller is relieved from any liability. If it turns out later upon audit that the exemption certificate is fraudulent, the department would actually go after the person who gave the fraudulent exemption certificate.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. No, that's good. I appreciate that because I often will get the question for students who are going into the career of photography in post-secondary or college as to what kind of camera. And, of course, it's very expensive for the students, so it's nice to know, Representative Dabney, that should this become legislation, that could be yet another savings to our students, especially in purchasing that kind of equipment, which is more than a book or a audio cassette tape or whatever. Not cassette tape, that dates me. You know what I mean. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgences.
Could be competition, you know, if you push this far enough.
Oh, I'm well aware of that. Yeah. That's why I'm here.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney. I'm going to say two things. One, I serve on the Transportation Committee, and one of the bills we've heard this year is about taxing tires and auto supplies in order to pay for roads and bridges. And I wrote up, you know, I spoke up at that time about countering, well, maybe we need to direct the taxes from erasers and pencils to fund education, mm-hmm. as my counterpoint. And you're removing my funding source by this bill. So I want to raise that objection. But the other one is I have been working for some time in the area of childhood obesity. Mm-hmm. There's a relationship here. We have wanted to remove some items from taxation or for use with EBT cards. And so I've been working on a national level, not necessarily the state of Minnesota, though we have had folks on the other side of the aisle raise these issues before, and we've tried getting a waiver, and we're told no. But in my little national work, as soon as I raised an issue like that, I had calls from every retailer across the country that this would be too hard for them to do. It's too hard for them at the retail store level to be able to say when things are taxable and when they're not. They don't want to have to do that. In fact, I tried using the argument that in Minnesota we already don't tax some things and we could just follow that. But so I'm hopeful, I guess, Mr. Representative Dabney, that you and your effort can find a way to make this work so that I can follow suit in Health and Human Services. But I can just, I'm just warning you now that I had retailers calling me at home and showing up at my office with objections about doing anything of this sort. So just be forewarned, they may be there, and if they're not and you're able to successfully do this, I will be in your office to find out how you did it so well, because I have been not quite as successful.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Depp.
Thank you for the good wishes, Representative Norton. But I would remind you, if in the plain reading of the current statute, this is already law. That's not the way the department is interpreting it, I grant you. But hopefully that will reduce the number of retailers beating a path to my door, because it is already law. Total speculation, what's the percentage of these sorts of items that would be purchased through a school bookstore where they've already got that process in place? Versus, as the chair raised, folks going to Target. I think more of them would be purchased through a school bookstore where the process is in place and it doesn't cause them problems.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald brought up a question. It made me think sort of out of the context of electronics, but in the same vein. Could this exemption apply to a automotive tech school of a sort? So you might buy $20,000-$30,000 in tools easily in that process. Would this apply?
Ms. Dahl?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it would apply if the student is required to provide their own tools. So if you were in a vocational technical school where you were doing auto repair and the school doesn't supply the students with the tools but says you must go out and purchase your own tools to take this course, then yes, those would be exempt under this provision.
Representative Heitzman, follow up?
That answers the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions? I guess we could ask anyone in the audience ask a question if they want to testify. But
is the Retailers Association here?
They will be next time.
Target would be able to make the
Representative Rosenthal renews his motion to re-refer House File 89 to the Tax Committee. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and your bill is on its way to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I appreciate the support.
Representative Christensen is next. House File 1022. Would you like to make a motion
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1022 and also have the pages pass out my treats.
Sweet. I love the freshmen.
House File 1022 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our final bill. So,
Mr. Chair, just wanted to...
Representative Isaacs.
I just wanted to know that he has my undivided attention.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, it's because of the treats, right?
I'm not willing to comment on that, sir.
So, Representative Christensen, would you like to begin your presentation?
I'd love to. This is a pretty simple bill, actually. A constituent of mine came to me with a concern and has to do with the child care credit for higher education. I have a constituent who he actually, you know, is a lifelong Minnesota resident, went to school, met a nice girl in college, they got married, now have kids, but because she is not from Minnesota, because you have to live in Minnesota for 12 months for non-academic purposes to be considered a Minnesota resident, she's still in school, but their family isn't eligible for this a grant for child care because she's the one in school and she's technically not a Minnesota resident, even though her husband is a Minnesota resident and their kids are certainly Minnesota residents. But because the entire time, including their marriage that they've spent here, she's been in school, she hasn't met the 12-month requirement of living here for non-academic purposes to officially become a resident. And I'd like to call down University of Minnesota President, Student Body President, Joelle Stangler, famous in this committee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And members are going to be listening, although they're eating at the same
time. That is absolutely okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Drew, for bringing this forward. I just have a short statement to make today. We touched base with our parent program help center over the last few weeks talking about this expansion, and there's three reasons that they support it, and so it has our support because it has their support. This extension will make it so that more people are eligible to apply for this credit, and the parent program office, is already trying to encourage more people to apply because fewer people apply than are already eligible, and so they really are looking to expand this credit to our student parents to make sure that they're able to complete their education in 4 years and not have to take on the additional debt in the fifth year. The second thing is that they also don't think that this will provide any lack of funding for the students who are currently in-state residents. There will be plenty to go around. All that were already eligible will continue to be eligible, so that's not a concern of theirs. And third, from their perspective, and there's data that is pretty sparse to support this, but anecdotally they told us that they believe that if parents are completing their education at the University of Minnesota in the state of Minnesota and they're married to a Minnesotan, they're likely to stay in the state. So this is really supporting our parents that will be future residents of the state, and so I think that's really important to remember. So this change, this bill has my support and the support of, 30,000 undergraduates behind it for what that's worth, and that's all I have to say today. So thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Ms. Stangler. The other thing I have to add here is that there's a current allocation already for this grant program. And typically that allocation is really, we come nowhere close to using that entire allocation. And you'll see there's a fiscal note. I believe there's a fiscal note in your packets, which is a little bit confusing, but essentially the result is that they don't think there will be any impact because it will already be able to be absorbed easily by the current allocation. There's a little bit of uncertainty just because they don't track students that are in this situation, but essentially they really don't think there will be any problem containing this in the current allocation.
And this is funded through the Department of Higher Education, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Anybody able to speak? To ask a question? Donuts are very good, by the way.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
You want some milk with yours?
Your testifier is supposed to bring milk as well.
Oh, shit.
That's the Ag Committee. Any questions? Well, thank you. Oh, we got a question from Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So just a point of clarification, Representative, could you just let us know, is this pertaining to if one is resident or zero are residents currently, and what that change would be? Just to clarify one more time, because we're all eating donuts, and so we were listening. But
Representative Christensen?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, currently in statute, you are only eligible if you personally are the student attending school is a resident of the state of Minnesota. This would expand it to apply if you are married to a resident of Minnesota, and obviously you have kids to be eligible for this, and so then those kids are residents of the state of Minnesota. But since you have spent your time here as a student, you haven't fulfilled the requirement of living here for more than 12 months for non-academic purposes in order to become a resident.
Thank you for the clarification.
I think that covers it. You want to renew your motion?
I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Christensen renews the motion that House File 1022 be laid over. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House 1022 is laid over for possible inclusion in the final bill. I want to remind the members we have an important responsibility tonight, so we're going to be moving through here as fast as we can so you can have a nap.
Thanks for the warning.
Okay. Right now, we'd like to invite members from North Hennepin Community College and Buffalo School to come down to the table.
Yes.
Welcome to the Higher Education Committee. And you have probably a plan here, so whoever starts, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed.
We do. Thank you very much. I'm Lisa Larson. I'm the interim president at North Hennepin Community College. And I thank you, Chair Nornes and Vice Chair O'Neill and members, for this opportunity to share a little bit about our partnership between North Hennepin Community College and the Buffalo, I want to get this right, the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District.
Perfect.
Today we want to share our unique partnership that's focused on providing more students high-quality college coursework while still in high school that will result in preparing students to better navigate higher education, enter the workforce prepared, and to complete college with less debt. Here with me today is Dr. Landon Purius, our Vice President for Student Affairs and Interim Chief Academic Officer from North Hennepin Community College, Dr. Scott Thielman, who is the superintendent for the Buffalo School District, Mark Mischke, principal, and Christina Cox, and she's a counselor. And we're all going to be sharing a little bit about the context around this partnership, our current state of planning, and where we're going. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Thielman to share how we got started.
Thank you, Dr. Larson, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present our story here. With Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District and North Hennepin Community College. The conversation about...
State your name, I don't know if you did that.
Scott Tillman, okay, superintendent with the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District. Thank you, Chair. Our conversation began back in 2010 as I joined the Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District and reviewing how many... concurrent enrollment courses we offered. We offered 63 college credits in our high school along with six AP courses. And through that conversation, then President O'Brien from the North Hennepin Community College joined Buffalo Hanover Montrose School District representatives in 2011 and asked us to think outside our current agreement and arrangements that we had. Through that conversation, we began a more focused conversation in the fall of 2013, whereby we wanted to intentionally create a pathway so that more students could earn potentially an Associate of Arts degree. Since that time, since the September 2013, we visited Irondale High School and the Moundsville School District to hear about their program. And what we learned there is that they were really focusing on creating access for all students and creating equity for the students that were in the middle. And we wanted to make sure that through that conversation back at the Buffalo High School, we wanted to make sure that students had access to a more rigorous curriculum at an earlier time. And through our conversation, we began looking at the Minnesota Transfer curriculum and the 10 goal areas that our students could achieve while at Buffalo High School. With that conversation and through North Hennepin Community College with Dr. Larson and her staff, we began to also think about Hennepin Technical College and looking at the world's best workforce and the pathways that we could create. Since then, we had a meeting with Moundsville and Anoka Ramsey because of their partnership, and they told us about the trials and tribulations that they experienced as they went through to create the pathway for their AA degree for their school district. We're looking at expanding that, as I said, into two pathways for our students and creating more opportunities for our students through this partnership. Mr. Mischke, our high school principal, will talk about where we are now in our partnership, and I'll let him come in and talk about that at this point.
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself too, yep, for the record.
Thank you, and I'm Mark Mischke, the high school principal of Buffalo High School, and I just want to extend a thank you again to all members here, and especially Ms. O'Neill, for giving us the opportunity to share what we feel is a pretty special opportunity for the students of our communities. So, as you can see on the slide, why we're here is my goal during my time is to highlight a few of the reasons why we really are here in front of you today, and to create some clarity, hopefully, for all of you as we move forward to provide these opportunities. The first point is talking about a true partnership with K-12 and higher ed. And sitting here, obviously, in the higher ed committee itself represents a step in the right direction for our two institutions to work more cooperatively together than oftentimes in contrast or in conflict with each other over the students that we both serve. And so today and over our meetings that we've had and as we move forward, I think it's truly, I can speak to it as a true partnership 916, which is very exciting for our children and our community. So one of the pieces we want to highlight is that genuine partnership. And the opportunity for us to expand access for more students. Dr. Thielman talked briefly about equity and what we saw at Moundsville School District and their work in particular in Irondale High School. And for Buffalo High School, next year's ninth grade class will have 523 students in it. And our goal with this program is for every one of those students to have access to college-level coursework within our buildings and to work collaboratively with North Hennepin Tech, and some of our other existing partners to provide that comprehensive opportunity, not just for the selected few, but for all of our students. And so those 523 ninth graders all have the opportunity to have access to the challenges that they deserve while they're at our high school. The third main point, the collaboration and produce students who are career and college ready. You briefly heard prior to us being up here a reference to vocational school and the massage therapist conversation. You also heard about conversations from the questions that you had about vocational opportunities. We have a unique situation at Buffalo High School in our partnerships to provide a comprehensive set of vocational opportunities that not only address our core area academic areas, but also in the areas of electives of machining, construction trades, weldings. And I'll talk more in the future about our Arts Magnet School and some of the arts-infused courses we have at our building. And so our ability to reach for those college and career readiness opportunities, I think, is another reason we're in front of you. And last but not least, to hold the idea of creating a quality financial investment in education. I know you're all sitting here because you see the same things I do, as trying to invest as accurately as you possibly can in a quality education for our children. I think the partnership that we're talking about allows us to invest early and effectively in the education of all of our kids at Buffalo High School. And in the end, as you play it through over the next 5 to 10 years, those 523 ninth graders that are stepping into our school next fall have this experience and have a rigorous college education opportunity within our building will not be a detriment to higher ed, but actually an asset, because more of our students will attend colleges and career vocational technical colleges, and they will come up more prepared with less remedial coursework needed, and in the end be more successful and more ready to take on the career opportunities that will be there for them when they graduate from college. And in the end, also was referenced earlier, with less debt. It's oftentimes talked about as far as debt of our college graduates living at home with their parents because they can't afford homes. And with this program, in the end, the long-term financial gains for our children are going to be very evident, and we feel we'll be able to show that direct correlation. So those are the goals of our conversation today, and will lead us through the rest of our presentation. So,
thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name again is Christina Cox. I'm a counselor at Buffalo High School. Just to speak real quickly about our existing relationship with North Hennepin Community College, we've had a very long-standing relationship with them, actually over 30 years, in kind of a unique way. We are a satellite site for North Hennepin's coursework. And so each semester we offer 5 to 10 courses, kind of those general psychology, writing, history, math types of courses within our own building. Additionally, maybe the other piece that we truly have maybe a stronger link to North Hennepin with is with our graduates. According to the statewide longitudinal educational data systems, data that we have 71% of our students graduating and going on to a 2 or 4 year college after high school. Of those, more attend North Hennepin Community College than any other institution, and so we have a strong tie with them. Currently, we have 100 or more, maybe slightly over 100 students in the Buffalo area attending North Hennepin. Those would include high school students enrolled in the PSEO programming, as well as residents of our community that attend post-graduation. That's really laid the foundation. It's a strong foundation we have to build upon, and with that, we want to work with North Hennepin to expand and offer more, and we have a great resource with them to do so. As a snapshot to what Buffalo High School currently has, we have partnerships with three institutions of higher education where we offer concurrent enrollment programming and college credit options for our students. We work with the University of Minnesota, St. Cloud State, and Southwest Minnesota State University, and offer 21 college in the schools courses, quite a variety for our students. And it really, they're offered in nearly all of our academic areas. We additionally offer 6 courses through AP, Advanced Placement Programming. With this, we really have provided an opportunity for our students to earn college credits while they attend our high school. However, we have found that there are definitely improvements that could be made with that programming. There really has been no intentional planning to that coursework. The courses that we offer have really come out of teacher interest and what they have pursued as courses that they would like to teach for our students. And additionally, I would say the students also take those courses based pretty much on their interests and maybe a tie to what they would consider a future career path for them. Looking at the Minnesota transfer curriculum has allowed us to really tie together what we have and know what our gaps are, but to provide a framework so that our students are more productive and efficient in their coursework. It will definitely help them in their future in terms of planning for post-secondary as well. One of the other pieces that we know we can improve upon is with that access, and we talk about that a lot. But we're really tied to kind of that state eligibility standard of sophomores being in the top 10% of their course or their class, juniors being in the top third, and seniors in the top half. And beyond that, it's really difficult for our students to be able to attain any college credits before graduation. And so we're really looking to partner with North Hennepin and create some agreements so that we can build in some scaffolded preparation for our students to really make it attainable for all students to gain some experience with college credit prior to graduation, to kind of build that mindset for them that college is attainable and definitely possible.
And I'm going to hop in, Mr. Chair, if that's all right. I'm going to reference talk to the next slide in the presentation.
Sure, go ahead.
Really, this slide highlights where that uniqueness of our partnership comes, as I alluded to earlier, and some of the programs we currently have offered at Buffalo High School. And the idea of moving, and I just want to highlight each of those programs a little bit so you know, have a little snapshot. I know some of you know our school, but for others of you, just a little background on what our school looks like and how this partnership will work. Currently with a high-performance program, our Quest program, benefits for our students there are the students that Ms. Cox actually referred to just recently. Those are our students that are in the top third, top half, or top 10% as they move into their sophomore, junior, senior year. And are the students that are typically accessing our college course options right now, which we want to continue with those partnerships and continue to provide opportunities for them. But where we're really seeing the gaps are in their next programs that are listed. Our Arts Magnet program, we are a unique high school, and we have a school within a school program within our building that offers an arts-infused education opportunity through a partnership with Northwest Suburban Integration School District. And so we have students from not only our district, from out of our district, that attend our high school for a specific arts-infused curriculum. And with our partnership with North Hennepin, courses such as photography, theater, media, studio art, ceramics are courses that we can bring in at a college level for them to be able to step out of those interest area courses with college credit. Another program we have in our building is the AVID program. Some of you may be familiar with that program in other schools throughout the state, but it's a program really directed at closing the achievement gap, targeting our middle students. The students, again, that Ms. Cox referred to that do not normally have access to college course options because of either their GPA or their ability to leave campus and access through post-secondary options. So for those students in particular, the program options we're talking about are going to be amazing. One class in particular with North Hennepin, we talked about the first-year experience course that North Hennepin offers for their freshmen that they feel may be at risk for not being successful in college. We'd like to bring that course within the high school and have students within our AVID program take that course. So as they step out of our school, there's some assurances that they will be successful at that next step in college. The last piece, the world's best workforce. Again, our partnership I alluded to earlier with Wright Tech Center, potentially Hennepin Technical College, and providing and also our work in our district with the STEM Elementary School, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and also a STEAM potential at our middle school. It fits perfectly with those options as we move into the high school as far as course options at a college level in the area of career and technical education. My last piece I'd share with you regarding our pathways at our high school is a little anecdotal aside. Last night I had my daughter reading through our PowerPoint. I don't know if any of you do that or not, but she's a very intelligent eighth grader who likes to criticize her father's work. And so as she looked through the PowerPoint last night, this slide in particular lent itself to a story. The high performance marking on here that you see with our Quest program, typically it's referred to high potential in some other area school districts that you may have attended. I actually went to change that last night to high potential, and my daughter grabbed me on the arm and said, "Now, isn't every student in your building high potential?" She said, and she meant it with the utmost sincerity. She wasn't being, she's somewhat sarcastic sometimes, but when she looked at me, she said, "Really sincerely, doesn't every student have high potential?" She said, "Don't put that way. Leave it as high performance." And I think that really summarizes for me why we're here today. And the idea that our opportunities that we're talking about in front of you today gives every kid that opportunity to have success. So that's what I wanted to highlight a little bit about our school and why some of the programs we have really fit well with potential support for this idea. So, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Miske, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mr. Excuse me. So, Mr. Chair and committee, my name is Landon Perius, and I'm the Vice President of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, as well as the Interim Chief Academic Officer at North Hennepin. So I've got the next couple slides that I'm going to go through. This is really the plan, is about where we are going from this point forward. You heard a little bit about how did we even get here over the last 30 years and the work that's kind of led up to this point. But what are we going to do going forward? And so part of what we want to do, I was happy to hear that Buffalo was going to be talking with Hennepin Tech as well, because they provide a different array of course options and programs that North Hennepin does not. So actually the two schools working together along with the district really will be able to provide a comprehensive set of courses or degrees or certificates, credentials for students in the district. But what we also are doing, and we're in the middle of this right now, is identifying what are the gaps that exist in terms of course offerings now. So Mark highlighted some of the existing relationships and partnerships that they have with other higher education institutions. What we will do is we will come in and fill those holes of those in within the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum or the Associate of Arts degree, so that students have the opportunity to complete one or both while they're going through the program at Buffalo. In addition, we're going to be, and this is the last bullet on this page, probably one of the most important pieces, is identifying the instructors at the high school as well as the faculty at the college who are going to work through or work together to actually deliver these courses. And so what will be required in that case is that both of those folks work together closely and are in the same room talking. So it won't be administration kind of trying to figure all of this out. It will actually be the instructors working face-to-face to try to nail down the courses, what's going to be delivered, how it's going to be delivered. We kind of will create the connection and then put the people who are actually doing the work together to get that work done. The next page related to, I'll do the first and third bullet together because it's really about putting together some guidelines and some procedures for this relationship that will deal with how do the college faculty mentor the high school instructors related to the curriculum being delivered, as well as steps to make sure that the course being completed on the high school is the same quality and has the same course outcomes as the course that would be delivered on the college campus. So that's another piece that we need to nail down, as well as working through some credentialing issues and syllabus development. And then the second bullet, once we've got some agreement, some framework in place between the instructor and the college faculty, then there will be some course outlines course proposal to actually go through the school board at the district level.
So we realize through this initiative, through this project, that it's going to have opportunities and it's going to have challenges. And some of those you've already heard about. I just wanted to bring your attention to them primarily because it's some of the best advice that we've received from our partners at Anoka Ramsey Community College and the Irondale School District as they went through their process of what did they want us to take away from what they learned as we're implementing and developing this plan. And they said, identify the best Buffalo High School instructors and North Hennepin Community College professors to partner on course options. And when you heard Mark talk about across the four types of areas that they want to provide college level courses and experiences, it's really imperative that we're bringing the best faculty and instructors together to provide those experiences and those coursework, those that are committed to this process, they're engaged with it, and they're interested in doing that, because we want them to come and align the curriculum and agree to course outcomes and assessments and those types of things. We want to ensure that the high school instructors meet our college course credentialing requirements or complete a plan to do so. And again, that speaks to the quality and the alignment of the coursework so that the students are ensured that they're going to be receiving college credit. And then also what's vital and necessary is to ensure that we are going to provide the necessary professional development opportunities as we start the program and beyond. What's crucial to this, and Landon mentioned it and Mark mentioned it, is really those relationships continue between the faculty so that they understand the students that we're serving, that we're creating the right curriculum, and we're teaching it in the right way, and we're providing excellent learning opportunities for the students so that they get a sense of what college-level coursework is that they're earning, and that they know that they can go forward and continue on with their college experience once they've completed at Buffalo High School. So these are all the vital three pieces that I think you've heard a little bit about that we're incorporating into the plan and we feel very important about. And what that's done for us, I think you get a little bit of a sense of that, is that it's really created a strong relationship between the college and the school district. And that's very important because we know that this is just planning. Once we get to implementation, there are going to be things that come up. But with a strong, trusting relationship, we know that we'll be able to work through those things. So I'm going to turn it back to Landon for some future steps.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee. Just a couple of comments I wanted to add that haven't been added yet about the future goals. So we've talked a little bit about access, and what this is not just about the higher, the top 25% of the graduating class of Buffalo High School. This is about the academic middle. So this is expanding access to higher education to students who would be considered in that middle part of the graduating class. It's also a way to change the mindset for those students in the middle that college is something that they can pursue and that college is for them. But it's also, even if the student only completes 3 credits or 6 credits of college coursework, that's something very significant. Again, not only for that student to believe that they can actually complete college level coursework, but the best indicator of success in college is success in college. So if they can actually complete even just 3 credits, that will put them on the right track to be successful should they choose to go forward and take additional classes. In addition, I'm going to skip down to the third bullet, is that students can, we're working right now to complete, to have the opportunity for students to complete their bachelor's degree on the North Hennepin campus. And so right now we have an agreement with MSU Moorhead where students can complete some programs on our campus without leaving North Hennepin in Brooklyn Park. But we're also working with Metro State, Bemidji, and St. Cloud State University to add additional programs, because one of the things we hear from students in our area who come to North Hennepin is they don't want to leave North Hennepin. They want to get their 4-year degree on our campus. So we focus this conversation largely on the opportunities that students in high school will have to complete or to get some college education while they're going through their high school journey. But in addition to this, we want to provide pathways for students to complete a 4-year degree if that's the best route for them, but to do so on the North Hennepin campus. So we're really looking beyond just the first 2 years of college. We're also looking to the second 2 years. In fact, we've even had conversations with Metro State about bringing some graduate level programs to the North Hennepin campus, so a student could potentially complete, let's say, their MBA, so that would be a 2+2+2 program in Brooklyn Park without having to leave our campus. And so that's an additional piece that's a little bit beyond the scope of what we're talking about, but something that we're also planning on our campus to try to expand access and opportunity for students coming to North Hennepin. And then the last statement, something that multiple folks have already indicated or stated, was really the goal is to create the more educated, well-prepared, and if successful, a debt-free workforce.
Thank you very much. We have a couple of questions. First, the high school is using a 7-period day. Is that, or 5? 6?
Mr. Chair, we're in a 4-block schedule right now, so 4x4.
Okay.
So 4 80-minute periods throughout the school day, and then it's a 16 course options. So they fill a 4x4, whereas a 7-period day have you 14 options.
Okay.
So it gives us 16 options, which also allows us to address. So
that allows to work with.
Mm-hmm. Allows us more opportunity to.
Sure. Okay. The other question I have, basically just a simple one. MSU's involvement in this, I mean, are you pretty much, it sounds like you're developing this kind of on your own, Are they involved at all as far as, you know, I guess I'm talking about the men's school leadership. Are you,
well,
I guess I'm just asking how much freedom do you have to do this?
Chair Nornes, MNSCU does this on a lot of different levels. And so we're just one example of a partnership that many colleges and universities already partake with their partner high schools. And so they fully support it. They act as resources. We're trying to provide some consistency across this type of concurrent activity for our partners, but they are fully supportive of this work.
I was sure they were. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Dr. Scott and Mr. Mischke and the rest of you, the counselor from Buffalo. Of course, that's in Representative O'Neill's propers, but many of my constituents, of course, in Wright County. So, Representative O'Neill, thank you for offering, arranging this. I presume you arranged this.
Yes.
She's a good arranger. She does that. She brings people together. And that's what's so important about your group, bringing them together. We know that it is now time to bring people together, especially at the freshman level, to open up their world of opportunities of what's out there and get them working with the colleges and the two-year programs to see what's out there, what fascinates them. So, Mr. Mischke, you said in your earlier presentation that your work and your goal, you mentioned many goals, but one is to reduce the remedial courses that one would need then when entering college. And that's been a discussion around here. As a matter of fact, there's a bill that'll be up, perhaps next week or on St. Patrick's Day regarding remedial courses. So how do you propose doing just that? I guess I'll caveat that is you're dealing with a group of folks, students that are kind of in the middle of the bell curve, if you will. Usually they don't need remedial courses, I believe, but I suppose every instance is, have their particular, you know, variances. Does that make sense?
So. Mr. Mischke?
Mr. Chair and Committee and Mr. McDonald, Representative McDonald, excuse me.
Joe's fine.
So to answer your question in terms of remedial, how do we eliminate that with this program? Multiple ways. In general terms, kind of the 30,000-foot level is the idea of exposing them to that rigor at a high school level, with supports around them, with teachers that they know, with an academic counselor that can sit down with them when they are struggling or maybe are working through those first challenges. In particular, though, kind of bringing it down to that next level, the one course I referenced, the first-year college experience at North Hennepin, would be a course that we would bring into our high school, whether it be at the 9th grade or the 10th grade level, almost as a prerequisite for students that we may see at risk to not being successful in a concurrent enrollment course. It's much like colleges are doing now, but yet bringing it at a high school level so they're exposed to that earlier with the supports around them. So then when they step into a college course option their junior or senior year, they are successful. So then as they go from our high school to the college level, not only have they had that introductory support with that course, they've also been through college-level coursework. So as they step onto campus, they're in level 2, they're in level 3 with those different courses. Does that make some sense in terms of the remedial piece? We're addressing those.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mischke, it makes perfect sense. Thank you.
Can I add one other piece, Mr. Chair, to that?
Go ahead, Mr. Mischke.
In particular, in another level, our AVID program I had referenced earlier actually is a set to directly address that. And I can talk more about the AVID program at another time or at now, but we address the academic middle with our AVID program. And the kind of coursework that's provided within that elective course that we have at our high school currently, 9 through 12, is another step in addressing the remedial concerns potentially for students as they step out of our high school.
So. Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Well, I just mostly wanted to thank you all for coming. And as Representative McDonald pointed out, you're from my district, my kids went through your school, and we've talked for many years and have known each other for many years. And when you started to tell me about this exciting new venture, you know, that you're not the first in the state, but you're the second. And was it Representative Bernardi? Is it the first was in your district? Okay, so that was the first partnership in this sort of light. So I just wanted the committee to be able to hear how the silos are coming down, and we've got this continuum. So something that we've talked about so many times in this committee is reducing the silos, bringing the silos down, that you're reducing remedial work that needs to be done. The students will come out with less debt. you know, all the things that we've talked about over and over and over again on this committee, and here's a solid solution that's happening almost organically because North Hennepin, how many years have you been having classes within the high school, you know, at night and so on? And Lisa, maybe you could just let us know exactly how long that partnership started, but this is, it's been a while.
Chair and Representative O'Neill, I've been told it's over 30 years that we've had a relationship with Buffalo, that we've had some type of college-level coursework being offered as a satellite campus.
Thank you. So this is incredibly This is incredibly exciting to see it come to this level where, you know, we're kind of it's kind of like CIS on steroids and taking PSEO and bringing it back into the high school. So, I was asked a little bit ago of, you know, instead of just focusing on the top, we're focusing on all, which is such an exciting departure from what we had been doing. So I just really wanted the committee to hear this solid example of solutions to all the problems we've been hearing and been brought to light. And you've addressed so many of them. And I just want to thank you for your hard work. And I can't wait to hear, you know, how it turns out with our first first year in action. So thank you for being here.
Representative Bernard, did you have a follow-up to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the presentation today and the shout-out for Irondale High School, in which I represent. Very proud of that school district, and it's nice to see it things expanding across the state regarding that. I just also want to let the committee know that we have something in common as well. I live in the Fridley School District. And we're part of the same integrated school district. And actually, my neighbor, can you believe this? My neighbor went to high school in Buffalo. So, you know, a lot of people thought that would never happen, but it actually does happen. And so I just want to thank you for your work on this and creating college accessibility for all students. And I mentioned the integrated school district because you are a part of that, and expanding the opportunities is going to help lots of students from not only your immediate school district, but other students that are participating there as well.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone want to comment.
Can I comment on it, Mr. Chair? Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, correct?
Yeah, very good. Very good.
To your point... To your point, the Northwest Integration School District that you're referring to was the foundational component that brought forth our Arts Magnet program, but also, as I referenced earlier, our AVID program and the support through that integration district collaboration brought in our AVID program as well, too. So it's definitely brought in some positive interventions into our building that have been able to address and support a wide range of kids, which is very exciting. So totally agree with you.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only because I like winning, I would let you know that I think I taught in the first program, and it wasn't either of you guys. there was a program like that in St. Paul a few years back that I worked with, and I'm just kidding about the winning part, but I do strongly support what you're talking about. But I have a question for you, and maybe I missed it. When the program I worked in, not only did it look at the middle, as Representative McDonald said, the bell curve, but it also looked at students that were assessed at being ready, or no, excuse me, were assessed at being capable of college work but weren't doing college work, so they weren't on a track, and it tried to pull them off wherever the track they were going, and I use that term very loosely, into more of a college mindset, and so then we'd bring them into the school and teach them and have courses and give them college credit. And I'm wondering, when you guys talk about going in the middle, how much are you actually focusing in on that? And I don't know how much of a degree. I mean, in St. Paul, it seems like that not on college track and at-risk students seem to kind of go hand in hand, so it's an easy marriage that way. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's the same, we would use the same qualifiers in your situation, but I'd be interested in knowing to what level are you reaching into those students that may be off track, so to speak, from going on to a secondary post-secondary education situation, and or could be students that are at risk in some way, shape, or form, either economically or whatever. And so to the level that you guys are playing to that, I'd be interested in understanding that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Isaacson, correct?
Yep.
One of the programs we have actually in the St. Paul School District now worked with the North St. Paul High School in particular, brought in the AVID program. And some of the questions you're asking for as far as intentional identification of students that are off target, that AVID piece, the AVID component, is actually focused on that exact piece. So, for example, this year's next year's ninth graders coming in will be, we have an application process in place with eighth grade staff at our middle school to say, identify students that have the potential but haven't reached it, that are off track, as you kind of mentioned, as you said, loosely, but off track and not necessarily in line to potentially take college course options, but have that intellectual capital to be able to do so. And so that's the back to the irony of how it's all kind of coming together. Totally agree with you, and one of the unique pieces of this is that we have an idea in place and an application process in place to kind of bring those students to the forefront that wouldn't have been brought otherwise.
Dr. Thielman?
Mr. Chair and Representative Isaacson, we're looking at trying to reach students down to the 30th percentile on their class rank. And so when we say the middle, we're not just looking at the 50th percentile because of the limited access that we currently have with the top 10%, top quartile, top 50% as they are in their class and in their rank. And so by having this opportunity, we're trying to reach down even further into our student population to create more equity and access to a more rigorous curriculum.
And Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reason why I say that is the program had like of students that would normally not have gone or perhaps wouldn't even have graduated, like a 98 or 99% rate of students going on to a post-secondary option. And that literally is, to me, like the sweet spot of pulling people out of one possible lifestyle choice that leads us to a lot of misery to another completely different lifestyle choice that leads to being productive members of society and taxpayers and all that kind of stuff. So I just can't possibly stress enough how I think that is super important and commend you on your work and hope that you'll pay extra attention to that. Thank you.
Dr. Thielman?
Mr. Chair, I'd be remiss if I didn't speak to this last slide, which is the ask, asking for support. Looking at career and college ready, we used to receive funding through the Perkins grants where we had career counselors. Right now, with the limited funds that we have, if there could be some movement at the legislative, I know it's not at the higher ed committee, but that this is something that's been identified, K-12, expanding that AVID program because there are costs associated with it. We're investing in this, but if we could put in the additional support to create the access and the equity, and then concurrent enrollment programs, just so the committee knows, last year at Buffalo High School, we committed approximately $100,000 toward tuition agreement through concurrent enrollment. Now, that's a great investment, and we're willing to make that. We know that if those same students would have enrolled in PSEO, it would have cost the district about $500,000. So we're making that investment, but it's still an investment on the school district's part. And if there would be some recognition of the cost of the concurrent enrollment program, which we know benefit students, we'd really appreciate that. So I'll stop with that, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions, members? Very, very good presentation. We appreciate you being here. And we'll stay in touch. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Members, I think our agenda is complete. Our meeting is over. Meeting adjourned.